recuperare questo risultato, insomma ti batti per altre sonne, sei sotto delle Gorvani Pachani, non sei se sei in Paschagiani, se c'è in Vandayam Shiguru Shinja, fare come la Shiguru in Vaishnavam Shah, Shirupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raganatam Vitam Sam Sajivam, Sadvaitam Sadvitam Parijina Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lavita Shakam Vitam Shah. Panchakam Pajivista, Kripasim Divya Vata, Pajakam Pajivista, Kripasim Divya Vata, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And read from Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 7, Knowledge of the Absolute, Text 1. This is one of Srila Prabhupada's favorite verses. So maybe if I chant slowly, you can repeat, or some of you have the verse on your phones or something like that. Try. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha.
That was easy. Mai Shakta Manaparta. Asamshayam samagramam yatagnash yasi chachchinu. That was a little harder, right? Yatagnash yasi chachchinu. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Supreme Lord said, Mai, to me, Ashakta Mana, mine attached, Partha, O son of Pritha, Yogam, self-realization, Yunjan, practicing, Mad Ashrayaha, in consciousness of me or Krishna consciousness. Asamshayam, without doubt. Samagram, completely. Mam, me. Yata, how. Gnashyasi, you can know. Tat, that. Shrinu, try to hear. Translation and purport by Sri Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, now hear, O son of Pritha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. That sound good?
Yes.
Report. In the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, just over the all the pictures here. In the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the nature of Krishna consciousness is fully described. Krishna is full in all opulences, and how he manifests such opulences is described herein. Also, four kinds of fortunate people who become attached to Krishna and four kinds of unfortunate people who never take to Krishna are described in this chapter. In the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul, capable of elevating himself to self-realization by different types of yogas. At the end of the sixth chapter, it has been clearly stated that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the absolute truth completely, but not otherwise. That's actually an amazing sentence. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the absolute truth completely, but not otherwise. Just by that. Impersonal Brahmajyoti, or localized Paramatma realization, is not perfect knowledge of the absolute truth because it is partial. Full and scientific knowledge is Krishna, and everything is revealed to the person in Krishna consciousness. In complete Krishna consciousness, one knows that Krishna is ultimate knowledge beyond any doubts. Different types of yoga are only stepping stones on the path of Krishna consciousness. One who takes directly to Krishna consciousness automatically knows about Brahma Jyoti and Paramatma in full. By practice of Krishna consciousness yoga, one can know everything in full, namely the absolute truth, the living entities, the material nature, and their manifestations with paraphernalia. One should therefore begin yoga practice as directed in the last verse of the sixth chapter. Concentration of the mind upon Krishna the Supreme is made possible by prescribed devotional service in 9 different forms, of which Shravana is the first and most important. The Lord therefore says to Arjuna, in this verse, if hearing is most important, therefore the Lord says to Arjuna, hear from me, yes, touch Chunu. Or, hear from me. No one can be a greater authority than Krishna, and therefore by hearing from him, one receives the greatest opportunity to become a perfectly Krishna conscious person. One has therefore to learn from Krishna directly, or from a pure devotee of Krishna, and not from a non-devotee upstart, puffed up with academic education. These are some of Prabhupada's favorite words, upstart and puffed up. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, this process of understanding Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, is described in the second chapter of the first canto as follows. Srimatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravan Kirtana Vrijyantasta Bhadrani Vijinoti Suritsatam Nasta Praishra Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavata Uttama Sloke Bhakti Ravati Naishtiki Tata Raja Tamo Bhava Kamalo Bhadayaschaye Cheta Eter Navridam Stitam Satve Stiditi Evam Prasanna Manaso Bhagavad Bhakti Yogitaha Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam Mukta Sangasya Jayate Vidyante Vidaya Grantis Chidyante Sarasamshayaha Shiyanti Chasuchamani Drista Evatmanistvare. To hear about Krishna from Vedic literatures or to hear from him directly through the Bhagavad Gita is itself righteous activity. And for one who hears about Krishna, Lord Krishna, who is dwelling in everyone's heart, acts as a best wishing friend and purifies a devotee who constantly engages in hearing of him. So this answers the question how just by fully thinking of Krishna you realize everything because Krishna gets happy. In this way, a devotee naturally develops his dormant transcendental knowledge. What does dormant mean? Sleeping. I remember that song we all sang in French, as he hears more about Krishna from the Bhagavatam and from the devotees, he becomes fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. By development of devotional service, one becomes freed from the modes of passion and ignorance, and thus material lusts and avarice are diminished. When these impurities are wiped away, the candidate remains steady in his position of pure goodness, becomes enlivened by devotional service, and understands the science of God perfectly. Thus, Bhakti Yoga severs the hard knot of material affection and enables one to come at once to the stage of Asam Shayam Samagram, understanding of the Supreme Absolute Truth, Personality of Godhead, Bhagavatam 1.2, 17-21. Therefore, only by hearing from Krishna or from his devotee in Krishna consciousness can one understand the science of Krishna. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Maya Shakta Manaparta, Yoga Munja Manashraya, Asam Shayam Samagramam, Yata Gnash Yasti Chachchunu. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, now hear, O Sanaprita, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. So I think we're all here today because we'd like to know God, yes? Maybe we have some other reasons also, but I think our main reason is that we would like to know God. We'd like to meet him. Yes, we'd like to meet him? Yeah, I was chatting the other day on the computer with one woman who was in the Hare Krishna movement for about 10 years and then left and decided that she was going to become an atheist. And She said to me, "How do you know that what you're teaching is true? How do you know?" What's our free from doubt? How do we become free from doubt? Of course, to become free from all doubts completely, generally, is gradual. To come to the point where one has absolutely no doubt, that is full enlightenment. But still, Krishna is saying we can know him without doubt, that we can say, "Yes, I know there's a God. I don't believe there's a God. I know there's a God. And I know that Krishna is the Supreme," without doubting. So how does one get this sort of faith that one knows Krishna? It doesn't seem to be just something intellectual. I mean, Rupa Goswami talks about how the qualification for beginning devotional service based on the injunction of the scriptures is, not surprisingly, faith in the scriptures. This is a problem we have with teaching Krishna consciousness in all the cultures of the world based on the Vedic scriptures, because most of the people in the world don't even know what the scriptures are, what to speak of having faith in them. If we say to people, "Well, just do what the Bhagavad Gita says," they'll say, "Well, the what?" Right? So therefore, Rupa Goswami says that first you're following the scriptures. Do this, don't do this. And therefore, your degree of faith in the scriptures is your qualification for taking up Krishna consciousness. If your faith in the scriptures is very shaky, then you don't have much qualification. If somebody comes along and says, "Well, I have a better idea," you go, "Oh yeah, that is a better idea." Or if your faith is kind of medium, you know, other people can't sway you, but you can't convince them either, then you're more qualified. And if you're firmly fixed in the scripture and you can convince anyone, well, not anyone perhaps, but at least you have the capacity, then you're the most qualified to take up Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. But that's still not knowing Krishna in full, free from doubt, is it? If I just said, you know, I fully know the scriptures, whatever argument you can give, I can give you an argument from the scriptures. I mean, we meet people like this. Yes? Whatever you bring up, they can give you the right verse, the right purport, the right commentary. They know the scriptures backwards and forwards, yes. But that's still not knowing God free from doubt, is it? No, it isn't. How do we know God in full, free from doubt? What does that mean? And it certainly isn't, you know, when we were down at chanting at Union Square, there were a bunch of people walking around with signs about Jesus, which is nice. I mean, better to walk around with signs about Jesus than beer or something like that. I mean, I was appreciating that they were doing something that was religious. But it struck me as very sectarian. And it was more like, we have the only way to know God, and you have to follow our way, and if you don't follow our way, you're going to burn in hell. But that doesn't seem to be based on firm conviction, is it? Because if you really know God free from doubt, how could you be so sectarian? It doesn't even make any sense. I mean, if there is a God, would that God only be accessible to people in a particular religion? And anyone who didn't follow that particular religion would have to suffer in hell for all of eternity? I mean, who would even want to worship such a god? It sounds like an Idi Amin or a Stalin or something like that. It doesn't sound like anybody that I'd want to spend eternity with. If you don't love me exactly like this, I'm going to make you suffer pain for the rest of eternity. Don't seem like a very nice guy. So that doesn't seem to me to be knowing God free from doubt, although they seem to be very convinced. Their conviction seems to be based mostly on a kind of pride, that we're better than everybody else. So how are we going to do this? And Krishna's telling us here some of the ways that we can actually know him free from doubt. And we'll see that all of these are very personal ways. Prabhupada's relating this verse very much to the verse right before it, the end of the sixth chapter. Yogina Mami Sarvesha Mankatena Antaratmina Shradavan Bhagate Yomam Samyuktatama Mataha. We have the word Shradavan, which means faith, and Antir Atmana, inside himself. always being meditating on Krishna within themselves. So the way that we get to know God free from doubt is really not very difficult. The concept of it is not a difficult concept. It's something that even the children here can understand the principle of and what we're talking about. It doesn't require, you know, a lot of training and education or intelligence to understand what is the principle, what is the method. As Prabhupada would say, it's simple for the simple. And even how to do it is not really that complicated. This garland is extremely heavy. I think only God can wear it for a long period of time. So even how to do it is not a very difficult thing to understand. To understand what to do and how to do it. What seems to be difficult, though, is the doing of it. It seems that the actual doing of it, even though one knows how to do it, does seem to be somewhat difficult. So what is it that he's telling us to do? Well, he's telling us to use our mind, mana, Maya Shakta Mana, to use our mind. And this is a theme throughout the Bhagavad Gita. Engage your mind. Man Mana Bhava Mad Bhakti Omajati Mam Namaskru. Krishna says that twice in the Bhagavad Gita. If a teacher repeats something more than once, it must be important. And he says it right at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. And if a teacher says something right at the end in their summary, it must also be very important. So Krishna is really talking about using the mind. Now, not only using the mind, and Prabhupada picks up on that in the purport, where he says, and if we fully engage the mind, by concentrating, Prabhupada likes to use this word, concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the absolute truth completely, but not otherwise. So using the mind, how? Not concentrating the mind like the Jnana yogis do. The Jnana yogis concentrate their mind mechanically. And by the way, anybody can learn how to do this. I mean, really, we could teach this in half an hour. It's not a very difficult thing to do. If you simply change the way you're sitting and the way you're breathing, and then you can focus your mind completely without it wavering. So that's what the Jnana yogis do. They do it in a mechanical way. Just like all of us learn immediately in life how to sleep. We even sleep in the womb. Yes, we all learn how to sleep. That if you put your body in a certain position and you deal with your senses in a certain way, there's a certain way that all of a sudden, poof, you flip into another kind of consciousness. Yes, correct? And we all learn how to do this, where some people really struggle with it. But most of us, it's not that difficult for us to go from the waking to the sleeping platform mechanically. Yes? So one can also learn how to go from the waking consciousness to a trance consciousness, where one's mind becomes fixed. In our normal waking consciousness, our mind jumps around a lot, correct? Yes? If you've ever been to India and you see the rhesus monkeys jumping around. So I think the mind in our normal waking state is something like that. Just, you know, doing acrobatics and going all over the place. So one can do that mechanically. And Krishna has talked about a mechanical system in the previous chapter, which Arjuna pretty much rejected. He said, Chanchalahimana Krishna, my mind is too much of a monkey and I'm really not interested, he said, in this mechanical process. He said, what if I try it and I'll fail? Because although it's very easy to teach anybody how to control their mind mechanically like that, it's very difficult to have anybody keep their mind there. That's the difficulty. As Prabhupada said, in the West you're not accustomed to meditating for long periods of time. But even in India, Prabhupada saw yogis go into a trance and just fall asleep. To stay in that trance state for a long time is very difficult. One becomes restless. One becomes restless. So, and Arjuna said, no, I don't think I'm going to be able to do this by a mechanical process. So Krishna's here urging concentration of the mind, not through mechanics, but through a shakti. Maya shakta manaprata. Maya ashakta. Through attachment to me. Concentrate your mind on me through attachment to me. So we have our first principle is concentrating of the mind. And the second principle is to do the method for concentrating the mind is attachment. Which is fascinating because Krishna has denigrated attachment and continues to denigrate attachment throughout the whole Bhagavad Gita. He says, you contemplate the objects of the senses, you become attached to them. From that attached, you get lust. From lust, you get anger. From anger, you get bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. When intelligence is lost, one falls down into the material pool. He says, you have this attachment, fear, and anger that bewilder the living entity. He says, we all have this desire and hatred, attachment and hatred, that's binding us to this world. And but here he's talking about attachment. You say, fix your mind on me, concentrate your mind on me through attachment. All right, and the next thing he says, and we'll look at each of these a little bit in depth, the next thing he says is madashraya. Actually, no, the next thing he says really is yogam. So yogam is linking. And linking also implies a kind of attachment. You're linked to somebody. And then madashraya. Ashraya means shelter. And often when Prabhupada speaks about this verse, he spends a lot of time talking about madashraya. And in fact, he's referring to that somewhat here, also in the purport. That we have Krishna as our shelter. And then he says, if you do this, you'll know me in full, free from doubt. And then he says, just here. So we have concentrate the mind on Krishna with attachment, with linking, with Krishna as the shelter, and here. And Krishna's assuring us that if we do this, we will actually know him in full, free from doubt. As an experience. Not as a statement of belief. Not as a knowing of the scripture in terms of being able to cite chapter and verse. Which is certainly useful to have the right belief and to be able to quote the scripture is very helpful. It's a higher level of qualification for engaging in bhakti. But it is not in and of itself bhakti. And it is not in and of itself knowing Krishna. Knowing Krishna has to happen by direct experience. How do I ever become free from doubt of anything? And studying about teaching, one of the things one has to do when teaching people anything is you have to convince them that what you're teaching them is true. Now, how are you going to convince people that what you're teaching them is true? So you basically have two options. One is an external authority, and another is an internal authority. So you can convince people that something is true by having someone external to them that they trust say, this is true. And those people can be what they call authorities or anti-authorities. Like a doctor can tell you that smoking is bad, and somebody dying of emphysema can tell you smoking is bad. So one is considered an authority and one is considered an anti-authority. But those are people outside of yourself. But then there's our internal authority, where we ourselves come to understand, oh, that's true. And the time when we come to understand for ourselves, oh, that's true, we're much more deeply convinced. So really good teaching is when you give your students an experience where they get to see it for themselves. You know, when I was growing up in the city, I went to school in Manhattan, and I remember when I was a little kid, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 years old, and we did an experiment where we mixed water and salt. And then we put the bowl on a shelf in the classroom. And after a while, the water evaporated and it was just salt. And I was so fascinated. You know, if somebody had just told me that, if the teacher had told me, but because I experienced it, I really believed it. Does that make sense to everybody? So the only way we're really going to know Krishna free from doubt is our personal experience. Which Krishna says in the 9th chapter, Pratyaksha Bhagavan Brahma. So all of these are keys to personal experience. Let's look at each one of them in a little bit more depth. We listed them, let's go back and look at each one. So concentration of the mind. Why is it that concentration of the mind reveals God? Why don't we concentrate the mind on God? is God revealed? Anybody have any idea? Yes.
Because we're focusing our total thought capacity on Krishna and nothing else at that moment.
Okay. We're focusing our total thought capacity on Krishna and nothing else at that moment. But why would that reveal him? I mean, if I focus my total concentration, you know, on a piece of wood, I'm not going to know everything about that piece of wood, generally speaking. But why with Krishna, if I fully focus my mind? Yeah?
When Krishna is a person, if somebody is paying attention to him, then I think he would reciprocate with that.
Okay, that's definitely a fact. She said Krishna is a person, and therefore if someone's paying attention to him, he reciprocates. I mean, we're like that. If someone gives me their full focus and attention, then I become interested. Yes?
Krishna and his thoughts or his name are different. If you focus on him, you're connected with
him. Oh, very nice. Because God is absolute, thoughts of Krishna and Krishna are the same. And therefore, if it's a full concentration on Krishna, if there's nothing interceding in there, then you are going to have Krishna immediately. Yes, sir?
In Bhakti, Bhakti yoga.
You develop Bhakti, yes. But what is the process by which that happens?
Silence.
Excuse me?
Silence. Being silent.
Being silent, yes, but why does it work?
You can hear him.
Because you hear him in the silence. Oh, very nice. I like that. That if you totally concentrate your mind on Krishna, you all of a sudden become receptive to him. That makes a lot of sense too. I think that ties into what you were saying. Right? If I want to get to know you, and I have a conversation with you, I just finished a many-month travel with one of my grandchildren, and he was able to make friends with just about anybody instantly. And one of the ways he would do that is he would ask them questions about themselves. I mean, he'd do that with somebody on the plane, you know, anywhere. And he would really listen to what they said about themselves. So if we really concentrate on Krishna, who wants to speak to us and wants to reveal himself to us, we'll be able to, because thought of Krishna is Krishna, we'll be able to hear him. We'll be able to perceive him. And just like if I'm having a conversation with you, and while I'm having a conversation with you, I'm texting on my phone, or I'm thinking about what I want to cook for dinner, you know, then I don't really get to know you even though I have a conversation with you. Isn't that a fact? But if I fully focus on you, I do get to know you. All right. Any other thoughts? Yes.
I have a question. What about people like Kamsa, always thinking of Krishna all the time as well?
Ah, so what about Kamsa who thought about Krishna in a malicious way? Well, of course, we're told Yam Koda Kama Sahaja Pranayati Bhitti Patsayu Moha Guru Gauravasevi Bhavai San Chintitashram Sadrasim Tanamaparete. That even if you think about Krishna in a negative way, you will know Krishna. The negativity has to be removed. But even thinking about Krishna in anger or lust or greed. Now, why is that? It's the next point that Krishna is saying, Maya Ashakta. Think of me with attachment. Because even those negative emotions involve some sort of attachment. If I'm always afraid of you, that's a kind of attachment, isn't it? If I'm always hating you, that's a kind of attachment. I mean, materially, we take birth again and again with people to whom we're attached. And that can be attached either positively or negatively. You can take birth again with people that you love, and you can also take birth again with people that you hate. It happens. You know, people become, you know, parent and child, brother and sister, husband and wife, etc., because in their last lives they hated each other. You know, if you die thinking, I'm going to get that Joe Smith, that draws you back to Joe Smith, yes. So, our mind is very much, it's thinking, feeling, willing. In fact, we don't do anything, psychologists have studied that, we don't do anything based just on thinking. There always has to be feeling, there has to be some emotion and some desire Without the willing part, you don't do anything. And this is what Krishna talked about with the fall down sequence. There has to become this attachment. So our method for always concentrating our mind upon Krishna is attachment. That is our method. And attachment means emotions and desires. That's what attachment means. Attachment means that whatever I'm attached to, whoever I'm attached to, is important to me. That's why I'm attached to him or her or it or whatever. Correct? Why am I attached to, you know, my shoes or my phone or my dog or my husband or my whatever? Because this person, this animal, this thing has some importance to me. If I were to lose it, it would be bad. I need it. I depend on it. I care about it. I'm interested in it. I find some pleasure in it. And that kind of attachment naturally puts our mind in full concentration. Very naturally. Prabhupada speaking about this verse in India, he said everybody knows how to become attached. Yes? He says we don't have to train anybody. From infancy, we know how to become attached. We know what it means to be attached. And as soon as you're attached, then your concentration is full. As soon as your concentration is full, then you're receptive, then Krishna is interested, then Krishna is there. So our trick to full mental concentration is not so much the time of day, the sitting posture, the place. That all helps. I mean, look, it helps. If you're sitting at the foot of Govardhan Hill at 4:30 in the morning, surrounded by great devotees during the month of Kartik, it helps. It makes it easier. But you can be sitting at the foot of Govardhan during the month of Kartik with devotees around and be thinking about something completely different. And there are all kinds of people who live at the foot of Govardhan and think of something completely different. As you walk around Govardhan, they'll be trying to sell you other things. Please buy this, you know, soda. Please buy this. They have these loudspeakers. Shital pain bomb. Shital pain bomb. That they say over and over and over and over and over and over. So it's not that. Those things are helpful. Proper time, proper place, proper company. But what really allows us to concentrate our mind is attachment. And if we're attached, we can focus our mind anywhere, with anyone, at any time. And if we're not attached, we can't focus our mind no matter how conducive the environment is. You know, we might get a little shadow or reflection, but we don't get the real thing. So this is the key. This is bhakti. This is bhakti. Really, chapters 7 and 9 are really the essence of bhakti in the Gita. Say, 12 also. And that's what bhakti is, maya shaktam anavarta. Always think of Krishna and never forget him, but only with attachment. Now, then think of him how? And this is the point, marashraya. Don't think of him as an enemy. Yes, that will work. It will work, but you have to go through some purification first that may not be very pleasant. So it's not very advised. If one thinks of Krishna with greed and anger and hatred and envy, you know, that you will become fully self-realized, but that other stuff will have to be removed, and the removal of that other stuff is not a pleasant experience. So our suggestion is, Krishna's suggestion is, the way that one becomes attached is seeing Krishna as one's shelter. Because, you know what, he is our shelter. That's just the truth. We don't really have any other shelter. Is the body a very good shelter? Sometimes. On a good day. But is it reliable? Can you rely on your body? You know, Are you sure when you wake up in the morning your body's going to be able to wake up out of bed and walk around and do what you want it to do? Right? Generally, but not always. And for some of us, maybe not even generally. What about the mind? Is the mind a very good shelter? Our family, our friends, are they reliable shelters? No. I don't absolutely. I mean, they're sometimes to some extent. Our pets. Their pets are good shelters. I don't know. I know people who had dogs that, you know, bit their kids' faces. I know of at least two kids who had, you know, major facial trauma from pet dogs. Our government, is that a good shelter? And, you know, I'll tell you, compared to most of the world, we have a pretty good government. Really, I mean, we really do. We travel around the world and we really appreciate the American government, relatively speaking. But is it a very good shelter? No. No. What about our things? Are they good shelters?
Yes.
They are? Your house, your car.
In my mind.
You break it, you lose it. It becomes obsolete, huh? A house. Is your house a good shelter? It is? Well, suppose there's a fire or an earthquake or it gets cracks and leaks in it. And instead of the house taking care of you, a lot of times you're taking care of it. A lot of times you're the shelter for the house instead of the house being the shelter for you. But Krishna is our real shelter. Krishna is our real shelter. He's always there for us. No matter what body we're in, he's always there. He's always giving us yoga kshema bhamyam. He's always giving us all the necessities. Maya dakshana prakriti suyute satracha. He's actually our shelter. Everything. Our air, our water, our food. The bodies we get to fulfill our desires, the minds, all these are, they're all coming from Krishna. He's our beginning, he's our middle, he's our end, he's our best friend, he's everything. So how can you not be attached to your total shelter? I mean, come on, we're attached to, you know, our home or our room, right? I'm attached to my bag. I keep making sure it's still there. That's my house. Awe. Oh, I don't know if it's much of an awe. I mean, we're attached to those sort of things. We're attached to our dog. We're attached to our family. We're attached to our body. We're attached to our mind. How could we not be attached to Krishna, who's the real and complete shelter? If I can have so much attachment to these things that are terrible shelters, frankly, for the little bit of shelter they give me, for the little bit of shelter I get from my house, my car, my mother, my father, my husband, my wife, my son, my daughter, my job, my body, my mind, my phone, if I can be so attached to those things for the little bit of shelter that they give me, all I have to do is meditate on how Krishna is my shelter to become attached to him. Now, how do I do that? How do I meditate on how Krishna is my shelter? Chakshu. Just hear. But we're not trying to hear again so we can pass an exam. We're not trying to hear so we can, you know, list the names of all the avatars or something like that. We want to hear about Krishna so we can start to feel. So we can start to feel that he's my shelter. And as soon as I feel that Krishna is my shelter, I will naturally become attached to him, because if you think about it just a little bit, you'll see that anything or anyone we are attached to is because we think they're a kind of shelter. All of our attachments are to something, someone that we identify as a shelter, that we identify as a refuge, as a place to fulfill our needs, as a place to feel complete, to feel whole, to feel satisfied, to feel pleasure, to find meaning. So when we hear that Krishna is really that incompleteness, we will become attached. And as we become attached, then we can concentrate our mind. And as our attachment increases, we can focus our mind more and more and more and more and more. And as we do that, we will come ourselves to realize, oh, Krishna is real, and he's God, and he's here, and he loves me, and I love him, and I love him in this way, and I want to be with him in that way forever. And Prabhupada, of course, quotes these verses from the Bhagavatam, first canto, as an expansion of this Bhagavad Gita verse, because really this verse, in a nutshell, we could say, very succinctly, gives us the whole process of bhakti yoga. And the whole logic of bhakti yoga. So if we want to become free from all doubt and know God, hear about him with a view to becoming convinced that he's our shelter and to developing that attachment. Any little attachment we have for Krishna, any little conviction we have for him as our shelter, we want to cultivate and cultivate and encourage and encourage and encourage. Because that will automatically make our mind concentrate on him. And that is, of course, what we're supposed to be doing for each other in this society. We're supposed to be helping each other to do that. So therefore, we're supposed to be talking with each other about Krishna so that we can hear about Krishna. Because someone is talking about him. And we're supposed to talk about him in such a way that people see, oh, Krishna is my shelter. Therefore, my attachment should be. So we have a few minutes for questions before the RT. Yes.
Yes, ma'am. Love it. So much is spoken on attachment, and for sannyasis and advanced modities in the lineage, why on a personal level is material possession so bad? Things are meant to be enjoyed.
Why for renunciates are material possessions so bad? Aren't things meant to be enjoyed? Well, actually, as bhakti yogis, we're not averse to material possessions. You know, I was reading about this girl who became a Jain nun at the age of 17, and she was allowed just one little bag of clothes, you know, one little baking bowl. I think they weren't even allowed to use any artificial lights. So people who are following an impersonal path, because they're not trying to be attached to Krishna. They're simply trying to be not attached to anything. So they have as little anything as they can possibly have. They take very little care of their body. They take very little care of their mind. She was allowed to just have a couple of Jain books with her. No family or associates, no possessions, because those are all the things that we get attached to. But as bhakti yogis, we can have a whole temple, but to speak of other things. Prabhupada was a sannyasi, and he had a whole lot of temples. That's a lot of stuff. But he saw it all as Krishna's. He didn't see it as his personal stuff, as being attached to fulfill his desires. It's wonderful to have desires. Have desires to make Krishna happy. Have unlimited varieties of desires to make Krishna happy with all of the stuff that Krishna is giving you.
Does Krishna want us to be happy?
Krishna wants you to be unlimitedly, boundlessly happy, eternally. But Krishna wants us to be happy in reality. Just like I have some friends whose son became a heroin addict, so they don't like that kind of happiness. If he says, I'm really happy. They don't think that's a very good thing. So Krishna doesn't want us to have an illusory happiness because that's not real happiness. Krishna doesn't want us to be imagining that we're happy. You know, I have the latest iPhone, therefore I must be happy. Is that true? Does everybody who buys the latest iPhone become boundlessly happy? Is that true? Until another one comes out, yes. And then even though the one they have works perfectly fine, they have to stand in line for 2 days to get another one. So if the first one made him boundlessly happy, why are they standing in line for 2 days to get another one? And the first one still works.
Perfectly.
Absolutely perfectly. So it must not have given them boundless transcendental happiness. So Krishna doesn't want us to have an illusory kind of happiness. Krishna wants us to have a real happiness. And we can have real happiness with things. There's nothing wrong with things. We have so many things here. Yes? Are there lots of things here? Even in this room, there's many things. But the way we become happy with things is by using them the way they're supposed to be used. I become happy with these by playing music with them. I don't become happy with them by hitting myself on the head with them or something. We become happy with things when they're used in the way that they're designed. So everything is designed to be part of yoga, which we didn't talk about in detail. The linking process. Everything is already linked to Krishna, and I am linked to Krishna. And when I realize that relationship, then my things can make me very happy. But it's not only the things that are making me happy. It's like if you're with someone, you know, you're with someone you love and you're having a romantic dinner and there's candles and there's roses and there's nice food and there's nice music playing. It's not really that you're happy, hopefully, because of the roses and the candles, hopefully, if it's a good relationship. I mean, maybe it's a really terrible relationship and you just want the roses and the candles, I don't know. But if it's really a good relationship, those things are simply stimulating your relationship. They're simply expressing. They're expressing the love that's already there, and they're increasing the love that's already there. They're expressing what's there, and then they're increasing it. So we can use all of these things. They're all Krishna's things. By offering these things to Krishna, then we increase love, and we express existing love. And then it's wonderful. But what we're really relishing is the relationship with Krishna, not the thing. Just like even our enjoyment from our things is what they do for me. It's not really the thing. I mean, who cares about a piece of metal and plastic? I mean, seriously. It's because it does something to us. I like my phone because it plays all my music and my lectures and my books. You follow? So we can find great happiness in our things when they connect us with Krishna. But what's really giving us happiness is the connection with Krishna, not the thing. Is it? Yeah, is that all right? And so whether the thing is there or not, you know, if you really love somebody, you could be happy just, you know, in a tent without the candles and the roses and the music. Right? My parents, when they went on vacation, they'd go camping in a tent on an island with nothing. So if you really love someone, those things are not required. But they can be there. So if we really love Krishna, we don't need anything. We could have absolutely nothing. We could have, you know, just the clothes we were wearing and absolutely no possessions and find Krishna everywhere and be happy with our relationship with him. But if we also have a temple we can use for him, and a car you could use for him, and a phone you could use for him, and why not? Is that okay? Okay. Yes?
I just wanted to clarify something you said earlier, a person who focuses his attention on Krishna like Kunti with maliciousness and the negative emotions. I think he said that such a person can become fully self-realized.
Yes.
I'm not sure if you meant by that that he can only go as far as understanding that he is not the body.
Oh, no, no. Someone who fully concentrates on Krishna, the person Krishna, even in a negative way, can enter into the spiritual world.
But that person...
But they have to be purified of the negativity. Prabhupada also said if someone associates with a pure devotee, even if it's offensive, that will eventually purify them, but they have to become free of the offensive part first. Now, sometimes Krishna does that with people by killing them, like Putana and Kamsa and Pandraka.
That what I'm trying to do is reconcile that with when I hear also that such people, they can only, they wouldn't know Krishna in his original form.
I don't think it's true they wouldn't know him in their original form. Krishna went to the spiritual world and knew him in his original form. So I don't think that would be the case.
They only get to realize maybe his impersonal features. They get to merge like that.
Well, some of them do, but not all of them. Some of them attain their original form and know Krishna in his original personal form. Some of them definitely do. If their focus was on Krishna's form and on Krishna as a person, then they definitely do. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.